Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Galazza, joined by Jacob Rudner, here to talk about week one of actual baseball. How are you doing, Jacob?
Doing well. Actual baseball makes me happy.
It does. It does. It does. And although I feel like for the last two episodes, including this one, we're kind of starting out with some bummer news. There are some notable injuries to some notable prospects in the 2026 class that I at least feel like we need to mention and talk about briefly to make sure everyone is up to speed who's following along in the podcast and maybe hasn't seen either the news that you've broken on Twitter or the stories that we have on the site kind of highlighting these names. Then we'll get into some fun stuff, I promise, because there's some fun on-field action to talk about, some players who stood out for us. Me and Jacob got to see a ton of really talented players. Opening weekend, we were both in Texas at Globe Life Field for the Children's Shriners College Classic. We also got to see Grady Emerson, the top high school player in the class, so we will dig into some of those names. But first, let's get the bad stuff out of the way. I feel like the most notable injury news we had opening weekend was Kentucky shortstop Tyler Bell. He injured his non-throwing shoulder on a diving play on opening day, the very first game of the season, and he's out indefinitely. It doesn't sound like we have any clarity right now on a timeline, but I'd say this one, just kind of reading the tea leaves, sounds like the most worrisome injury, at least in terms of like how long we're going to have to wait to see Tyler Bell in action. And obviously Tyler Bell is a prospect we think very highly of. We have him currently ranked number 14 on the board, one of the better switch hitting prospects in the class. Jacob, thoughts on this injury news?
Yeah, it stinks. I think that we have grown reasonably fond of Tyler Bell. He's a good hitter, a good shortstop. I think he does everything just well, is kind of how I would summarize Tyler Bell as a player. Yeah. And it sucks to lose him this early on in the season. It is a shoulder injury. We don't exactly know the specifics of that shoulder injury. We also don't know 100% yet that he's out for the season. So I think that that's somewhat encouraging if you want to try and turn this into like the best case news that we can. I have had some conversations in the aftermath of learning about this that have indicated that he's in really good spirits, that Kentucky is still having conversations with doctors. And so I think that there is still something to be learned here about exactly what the severity of this is and the nature of the injury specifically. All we know right now is that it's a shoulder. There were some rumors that he broke his collarbone. I can tell you that's not true. And so we'll just see. I think that, you know, we'll see what it is. It's encouraging that it's not his throwing shoulder. Mm-hmm. You know, from a draft standpoint, but just overall, obviously super crummy. And we wish that it didn't happen. So that's that.
Yeah. And Tyler Bell, I feel like any draft eligible sophomore, this year was super important for him. I mean, it's important for every draft eligible player because you want to have a strong platform season. But even beyond the injury, if we can just assume and know for sure that he'll be back fully healthy in X amount of months or weeks or days or however long it actually is, just adding to his resume was always going to be important for him this season. His 2025 year was strong. He hit 296, 385, 522, 10 home runs, 17 doubles, stole 11 bases, played a solid shortstop. But just adding more to what he's able to do at the college level, I think would have been really important. Most of his peers in this draft class, and it's a really good draft class. It got better today as we're recording this podcast. We'll hit on that at the end of the show as well. But I think that teams would just feel more confident having more IBs and more plate appearances from Tyler Bell, having him get the chance to sort of refine the areas that aren't necessarily weaknesses, because like you said, I think he does everything on the field pretty well, but just take a step forward in this season would have been important. So as much as like the injury is a concern, I just think the overall like collegiate track record, the volume of ABs is something that I would imagine teams are maybe going to be a little hesitant about now.
Yeah, I think the skill set is reasonably clear, and it helps also that he was such a good prep prospect. Like, this isn't somebody who broke out as a college freshman and then was going into a draft eligible sophomore season, and that was going to be, you know, his opportunity to really break out and secure that first round status. We knew already that this was kind of the range that he belonged in for this year. Mm-hmm. So if it's going to happen to somebody where you're going to have a potentially season ending or massively season altering at a minimum type injury like Tyler Bell has had, it's probably the right guy for it to happen to, just because it feels like it's a reasonably secure profile. Like I said, there's for as much as it would have been nice to see him improve this year, I don't think that we had a ton of questions about Tyler Bell. Like, it was a very known profile. He's a good hitter. He's got great makeup from everything that I've heard.
Right.
Super hard worker. Like, one of the things that I heard recently was that he was charting every swing of batting practice
for the team. I saw that.
So he's like, yeah, he's super involved. And so I think that it's a pretty unfortunate situation, and that goes without saying, but at the same time, like, for the exact player that it happened to, I don't know that it's going to be terribly damaging, even if it ends up being that he doesn't play another at bat this entire season.
Yeah, that is a good point. I think worth just reinforcing here that Tyler Bell was very prominent coming out of high school. He was drafted in the second round. It was big news when he didn't sign with the Rays out of the second round. He's played with Team USA. Last summer, he spent time at second, shortstop, third base with Team USA. He had a little stint in the Cape Cod League. So to your point, this is not some like huge collegiate riser who is maybe a little under the radar, unknown coming out of high school and literally just has 1 year with eyes on him. He has been scouted for a long time. So hopefully that won't impact him too much. We got two pitcher injuries to also get to today. Sounds like these, at least hopefully they'll be a little bit less impactful for these players. But Cameron Flueke, through his opening day start, he's dealing with a non-arm injury in his day-to-day, and it sounds like he's going to miss the second start. But Jacob, correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't sound like we need to be too concerned about this one. Hearing that it is a non-arm injury for our top-ranked pitcher in the class is very encouraging. But what have you heard on Cameron Flueke?
Yeah, this one I would chalk up to the least concerned category. I don't really have long-term fears for Flueke here. It's a minor injury. I can't really get into the specifics of it just because that's how some of these things work sometimes, but it is not an arm injury. It's not even close to an arm injury. I'll go a step further and clarify. We're not talking about like a shoulder or a neck. It's not as serious as a back. And so it is truly a minor injury. He is actually day to day. It's not, you know, coach speak to try and calm the masses here. I do think that we'll see him in reasonably short order, even if it ends up being that he misses another start. Teams will be cautious as well. Yeah. Like, I think that that's important to clarify. Coastal Carolina is a really good team. We have them ranked 11th in our poll right now. There's no reason for them to rush him out there to make starts against teams that they should be beating anyway. And so he's going to sit on the sidelines for this week. Maybe it happens again next week. Mm-hmm. One thing that I'll say, and I'm curious for your thoughts on this, and I've heard this in my conversations with scouts, he does have some violent mechanics about him. He's got a huge layback. He is built like the wacky inflatable tube men that you see outside of tire shops. Like, just the way that the guy moves is unique, to say the least. And I wonder if small injuries like this, and again, I will reiterate, it is a small injury, but if these are the kinds of things that are going to start to stack up, you know, I'm not somebody who lives in the camp of we can predict injuries, but I do live in the camp of we can also be afraid of certain mechanics. And I'm wondering, I'm not there yet, but I'm wondering if Cameron Flueke belongs in that category.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't put him in that category, but there's no denying that his mechanics are just super unusual. I was going back through after week one and like watching a lot of our top pitchers and watching Jackson Flora pitch before Cameron Flueke. Like, there is a significant difference in how these two move on the mound. Like, if you're drawing up a delivery and how you want a pitcher to look, you're definitely going to be more in the Jackson Flora camp. It's just buttery smooth and powerful. And Flueke, like you said, he has this unconventional, lanky, long arm extension, high leg lift. It just looks like a delivery that you maybe wouldn't design. And so it's hard for me to say like, oh, that delivery in particular is going to lead to more injuries in the future, because he has been pretty durable in the past right now. And I think, like you said, it's very hard to predict injuries. I'd mostly just say he's a pitcher, so odds are pretty good that he's going to get hurt at some point. I think it's also worth noting too, like, week one stuff looked just as good as we would have expected for him. Like, fastball was solid. Curveball looked like its usual hammer curveball self. I mean, he did let up two home runs, but he struck out seven, walked one over 5.2 with Fairfield. It was like two back-to-back home runs for him to start that game. Maybe not how he wanted to start the year, but in terms of stuff and how he was looking, control, command, I thought it looked like Cameron Flueke. So hopefully he can get over this week and get back and kind of be the same guy we expected him to be.
Yeah, and we're high on him for a reason. So yeah. I would also just like one more time reiterate, this is not a bad injury, and I think that, you know, he's going to be fine. So please concern.
Okay, let's move on to our third injury of the day. This is a pitcher that we actually got a chance to see this weekend. Tommy Lepore TCU right-handed pitcher, one of the hardest throwing pitchers in college baseball. I think opening weekend, at least the numbers I've been looking at, he was one of the just harder college throwers from week one in general. We got to see him. He pitched. The stuff was loud, but he's dealing with some arm soreness, and he won't be starting at UCLA this week. Sounds like this one maybe is a little bit more concerning. What have you heard on Lepore, Jacob?
I'm not going to be the alarm puller here and say that this is the most concern, because he's not out, but this is definitely up there on the concern chart as far as early season injuries go. You don't want to hear arm soreness. I would say that the track record of guys that have arm soreness and then end up being completely fine is not great. And so, yeah, we got to keep an eye on this one. I think that the early returns are that he is just experiencing arm soreness and they're not panicking and they're going to wait and see exactly what's going to happen. And that's why he's not going to pitch this week. And they're going to continue to evaluate him, all the normal stuff that you would expect. But again, I just think that most pitchers that end up in this camp don't have great long-term outlooks. And so it's circled on my list of things to keep a very close eye on. And it's also why I will not be at UCLA on Friday night. Instead, I'm going to go make the drive from my Southern California home to go see Mr. Jackson Flora take on Portland. So unfortunate. We really like TCU. You and I, we've talked about it now on the Hot Sheet Show and on the College Podcast. Super impressed with how the Horned Frogs looked on opening weekend. This is a really big blow, you know, just in terms of the college horse race as well. So from a draft stock standpoint, obviously very significant. From a college standpoint, arguably just as significant. And so this is a big one.
We had Lepore ranked number 43 entering the season. He was not in the same tier as guys like Tyler Bell and Cameron Flukie, who feel like no doubt slam dunk first round talents. And I don't know that my opinion changed on that evaluation after seeing him week one. Very good arm, but I think there are some questions that I have just in terms of like how this stuff actually plays. He threw five innings, allowed five hits, two earned runs, two walks, five strikeouts on 92 pitches. I didn't notice any sort of, like I said, he was one of the hardest throwing college pitchers on opening weekend. He averaged 96. He was up to 99, a few ticks down out of the stretch, but changeup looked pretty good. That was his best swing and miss pitch on this outing. He also threw a hard cutter, a low 80 slider. So all the stuff looked there. It looked like his typical self. But I do think Tommy Lepore is in this sort of range where he is not a consensus first round arm. There are a lot of guys in front of him. I think there's some reasons that he's not in that range now and would need to use a strong season to get into that range. So being healthy and continuing to post is going to be important for him. Obviously, it goes without saying for any player, and in particular pitchers, health is going to be important. So fingers crossed that it doesn't turn into anything more serious. But like you mentioned, I always do get a little bit queasy when you hear arm soreness or elbow soreness or any sort of soreness for pitchers, because I mean, oftentimes it's just a indicator of something that's happened. So hopefully it just stays arm soreness and he'll get back on the mound. But any more thoughts on Lepore or any of these other guys before we get into some Texas names?
No, that's it. I mean, I'll say just as a kind of a blanket statement, and this extends well past the first round names that we're going to talk about now and the ones that we just mentioned on the injury front. This is kind of the part of the year where we hear a lot about this kind of stuff. I think the injuries crop up significantly right at the beginning of the year. Guys just like aren't right. But I will caution our listeners, don't panic if you don't see somebody making a start. There are a lot of guys who will not appear in a game or will get held out or will make a really short abbreviated start early in the season. And it's not always related to injuries. I think that college coaches have their own designs. A lot of these guys will limit their best arms early in the season if they're playing competition that they think they can handle. Right. And so while there is some merit to the fact that you don't want to be missing starts, and you know, some of these guys actually do have injuries and that will happen, there are also a fairly large amount of guys who are just out because they're getting their load managed or, you know, there's a number of different reasons. And so when it comes to college baseball, if you see guys missing starts, don't panic. And it is what it is. I mean, this is kind of the nature of the beast.
Yeah. And I would imagine for a lot of pitchers around the country too, guys are still dealing with pretty strict pitch count limits at this point. Hopefully that is the case. I mean, the ramp up period for pitching is always pretty scary. This happens for college baseball. This happens in spring training for the professional guys. So just, it's typically when you see a ton of injuries. So hopefully we can avoid more moving forward. But Let's get into some of the names we were impressed with, some of the notable prospects we were there to see in the first place, even if maybe they weren't impressive, Jacob. We got to see a ton of prospects. I've got two pieces on the site kind of going over a lot of the names who stood out and just the prominent names in general, both current year class players to be aware of, also a number of underclass players to be aware of. Jacob has written a lot about just the college content from the weekend as well. I also really appreciate the new kind of top 25 explainer Jacob is doing. So if you guys are maybe more tuned into the draft and are not following our top 25, I would encourage you to do so. And it's cool to see kind of Jacob's thought process and a behind the scenes look into how that gets made up. But Jacob, we got a ton of names to talk about. One high school player, maybe we talk about him and get that out of the way. But was this your first time seeing Grady Emerson live in person? We got a doubleheader before college started, so that was fun. What are your initial thoughts on Mr. Grady Emerson?
You know, I liked a word that you and I heard from an evaluator while we were seeing Mr. Grady Emerson, and that he's just so safe. Like, mm-hmm. there are some players in draft classes that you know you can just feel good about, and like you don't have to ask a lot of questions. And I think that Grady Emerson really falls into that bucket. He's got a sweet left-handed swing. It's as good as it was advertised. We saw him go 6-for-7 with a number of extra base hits. Mm-hmm. He's a really good athlete. I think that you and I agreed as the night went on that maybe he's not a plus runner, but if he's anything less than plus, it's at least average. Good athlete. The makeup is great. We actually had a chance to talk to him, which was cool for a couple seconds, and he seems like a great kid. He's exciting. I think that there's a lot to like about Grady Emerson and very little to not like. I did come away wondering what the future position is like for him. I think that there's probably room for him to get bigger and stronger, and it will cause him to become maybe a little bit more of a physical, thicker player as he tries to get to more power. And if that causes him to move over to third base, it wouldn't surprise me. He's got a great arm. He didn't necessarily have like shortstop footwork to me, or at least like a very obvious standout shortstop footwork to me. I thought that maybe as he gets bigger, it would make more sense to have him at a place like third base where he can just kind of let the arm eat and continue to get, you know, more physically developed and stronger. But if he's a shortstop long-term, wouldn't surprise me. I really like the bat. Sometimes you watch a player and like, there's just not a lot to pick apart, and everything that you've heard is true. And I think that Grady Emerson really embodied that. Everything that you hear and we have talked about at Baseball America prior to me actually laying eyes on him in person felt very true throughout the two games that we saw of him. And I was impressed.
Yeah, it's fun to be able to get a high school look, have a multi-game high school look, because those games are shorter. Often when you're dealing with the elite hitters on a high school team, they're getting pitched around. So it's a lot of walks or intentional walks, or just they don't have much to hit. And the good hitters are pretty good at not forcing things. They don't want to expand the zone and take a bad cut just because they're bored of standing there. But I think me and JJ were talking about this. You and I were talking about this. To the team's credit that Grady was facing, they pitched him really every AB and gave him a chance to show what he can do. And he essentially was the Grady Emerson that we expected him to be. It would be surprising to me for anyone to have gone into those games and maybe changed their evaluations of him significantly. And I think it's just also an interesting contrast of profile compared to some of the college hitters surrounding him in this draft class, because most years, your top-end college players, your top-end college hitters, you're going to think of them as the safe, proven, polished, well-rounded sort of prospects that you don't have to worry too much about. And then the high school demographic, you're typically just getting a little bit more upside, a little bit more of a tool set, but that's going to come with some risk. And I feel like that's the inverse for both Grady Emerson and a number of the top college hitters in this class. Like, I could see some scouts saying that Grady Emerson doesn't have a single plus tool on the card, but everything he does is solid average or better. Like, I think the arm is plus. I think the hit tool is plus. But if you're a little bit more skeptical and you think it's more above average arm, you think it's more above average hit tool, then like you could look around and say, okay, there's not a single plus tool, but it's just a profile that I think you're going to have a lot of confidence in. This is a guy who's hit everywhere he's been. I think if I was to like gun to my head, who's the best pure hitter in this class, high school or college, Grady Emerson's probably my pick. And maybe that'll change as we get to see some more of these college players perform this spring against better competition. But I thought it was a really representative look at Grady Emerson. I still expect him to go very quickly off the board, but maybe the conversation around safety and security versus upside and risk will be interesting to continue to monitor with him in contrast to college players throughout the year.
Yeah, and to your point, I think that if you're going to be nitpicky and you're going to move him off of the plus line in certain tool areas, like I said, I think that those really, to me at least, and I'm sure other people have different opinions, but in my look, I felt like the only areas that you could really question were the fielding and exactly what that means for his defensive positioning future, and the run tool. Like, the run tool to me was actually probably the bigger one. I did not think he was a plus runner. Mm-hmm. And I've heard some people say that he is. But that doesn't move him out of the range that we have him in. I think that it's a pretty safe player to project in the top three picks in this year's draft. I think that Rock Chulowski is maybe not as good a pure hitter, but I think Rock...
Certainly at the same age, yeah.
Yeah, but I think Rock still has a safer profile in terms of like where he's going to go in this draft.
Right.
I think it would stun me if the White Sox ended up taking Grady Emerson over Rock. So you can like...
Right.
Rock one. I think that if there's a player who's the most likely, and I've talked about this on the college podcast, and you know, I'm becoming a huge fan of this individual, but Jackson Flora to me is going to have a chance to make some noise on draft day. I think the stuff is just like outrageously good. And, you know, to use a Peter Flaherty-ism, shout out to Peter.
Peter will live on in this podcast with his, with his phrases.
The ball of clay phrase, I think, is most applicable to Jackson Flora, because it's like really one of those guys where with the way that he spins the baseball and the athleticism that you mentioned earlier in the podcast, you can kind of do anything with him. Like, that's the kind of guy who can get into a pro camp and it's like, what kind of pitch do you want to add? Or let's talk about doing this and that, whatever. And he's probably capable of doing all of it. Mm-hmm. And if you want a pitcher, and you're the White Sox, by the way, who do a very good job of developing pitching, that maybe is intriguing to me. Going to get somebody who can be a contributor in the big leagues out of my rotation within 6 months, a year. But at the same time, I think that Emerson's like in that group. If we're gonna create a pod of three at the top of the draft class in February, which is still way too early, right now to me it's probably Rock, Emerson, and Flora.
Nice. Well, let's stick on Flora for a second here, because I think what we saw from him out of week one is very interesting. We didn't see him in person this week. There are other Texas names I want to get to in this show. I'm sure you'll have more to add on Flora after this weekend when you see him in person. But one of the things we talked about entering the year with him was just the diversity of the pitch mix, and in particular, how he was going to attack left-handed hitters. I watched the entirety of his outing after the fact, and it was funny to see, because first AB, fastball to a left-handed hitter, it's a double into the gap. And I was like, okay, like, is Jackson Flora still going to be like 60% fastballs to lefties? Is he going to show more of these pitches we've broken out? He did. He in fact did. Against lefties in his first outing, he was almost 70% changeup usage with this new kick change he's been working on. And I got to say, that pitch looked legit. I'm very excited to actually see it come out. And obviously that first double was not like indicative of anything that was going on further. Like, the fastball looked tremendous throughout the outing, but it really does look like he just has a greater depth of arsenal that he showed in game one. And I think that's encouraging to see. The changeup was his second most used pitch. The slider, which he actually has used, and I'm not exactly sure what his specific pitch tags are, but his slider sometimes looks more like a cutter. The tag that gets a curveball in that like 80 mile per hour range, it looks more like a sweeper at times. So whatever you want to call them, the harder breaking ball, the slower breaking ball, those were his two least used pitches, but he used everything 16% plus. So I was really excited to see like a balanced pitch mix from Jackson Flora, and I'll be curious to see if he maintains that this year. But I imagine lefties are not going to love that new changeup he's got.
I had said, I think even on this podcast, like way, way back,
that like October, November.
Yeah, there were a lot of people who had seen that changeup in the fall and thought that it was a plus pitch. I actually got to see the changeup in the fall and immediately texted in our Slack channel that I thought it was no worse than a 60 on the scouting scale. And it looked the part. I mean, it is a really good pitch. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, I do think that he's the kind of pitcher where you get him into your organization and you can kind of do whatever you want with him. Like, he's got a really good feel for the game. I know this because I've talked to him. He is extremely invested in the analytical data breakdowns of what he's doing. He wants to understand how everything works and kind of fits together, how he can influence at bats and how he can shape his arsenal based on the shapes of things and how things spin. And a pitcher who's that invested is always intriguing to me. Like, I like athletes that want to know why it is that their stuff works and how it is that they can make it better. And he is definitely at the top of the list for me among the pitchers in this class in terms of just sheer investment in his own improvement. And then the other thing is that one of the questions that we had, and you kind of touched on this, was out of the fall, we had heard that there were a lot of changes to his pitch mix. He had a new grip on the fastball because they wanted it to play differently to lefties. He added the changeup that you mentioned that we had heard was plus, but hadn't seen it. And then to answer your question about the sliders, there are three different pitches. He's got a shorter slider that he can use kind of in that like slider, cut slider mold. He can throw it a little bit harder. It's a firmer, tighter pitch. He's got a sweeper that he throws as a true sweeper. And then the new addition, and this is kind of the thing that I think people maybe missed because he didn't throw it too much in his first start, is he's throwing a hybrid pitch. He's throwing a slurve that kind of fits in between those two offerings. It's a larger breaking, more two-plane pitch that is kind of it's a curveball-ish look. And it looks really good out of his like very wide, lower three quarters, slingy arm slot. And he's intriguing. Like, is it the most amazing stat line out of week one? No, he hit three batters. He only struck out four over six innings, but they were shut down frames. I personally thought that he was very clearly the best player on the field. I thought Southern Miss looked completely outmatched throughout that outing, which is not an easy thing to do because that's a good lineup. And I, like I said, I mean, I don't feel as strongly about there being a gap between Rock and everybody else because Jackson Flora exists. And I just think that if you are the White Sox, there is an absolutely fair conversation to be had about exactly what it is that you want to be buying, exactly what it is that you develop best. And I kind of think that Jackson Flora checks more boxes for them as an organization than maybe Rock does, just from a developmental standpoint. And I'm curious if that at least causes some questions. Don't get me wrong. Rock is the number one prospect in this class. I'm not the guy who's going
to start arguing that. You're giving White Sox fans heart attacks here, Jacob.
No. And I want to be clear. Like, I'm not arguing the order that we have or the perceived, you know, Rock is the guy, tank for Rock, whatever you want to call it, that this is that year. But I just think that there's more of a conversation to be had than maybe people are thinking about at this stage in the game because Jackson Flora is that good. That's all I'm saying. Right. I think Rock is the best prospect. I think Jackson Flora belongs in this really elite tier that Rock exists in right now.
Awesome. Okay, let's pivot back to Texas. We have no shortage of names we can hit on here. And again, there's a lot more on the site we have if you guys want to get just as many players as you can that we saw and that stood out to us. I'd encourage you to go check out those pieces. But obviously want to talk about some of the names who are exciting to us. We got to see two first-round college names, Sawyer Strassnyder, an outfielder at TCU. He showed us what he can do in his first at-bat of the weekend, opposite field home run. Ryder Helfrich, sort of a similar deal. First day, he was just launching balls to the pole side. That's the catcher at Arkansas, kind of in that catcher one race with Von Lackey at Georgia Tech. Saw a number of pitchers. We saw a number of players who are not ranked on the top 200 who will be ranked in the future who impress. So, I mean, for me, Jacob, Sawyer Strassnyder was the most exciting player. He didn't have the best performance. I thought it was a rock solid performance, particularly in the first day and a half. His ABs were really strong, and I think stronger than I expected them to be entering the season, because Strassnyder's big thing a year ago is he's just very aggressive. He chases a lot. We started to see a little bit more of that towards the end of the weekend with some of his chase race and just aggression, but we got to see basically all of Sawyer's tools. We got to see the power. We got to see the speed. We got to see, I don't think he had too many super challenging defensive plays, but he moved around the outfield well. We got to see his arm. The arm for me is like easily plus. And this is the player I was thinking about most when I was thinking of contrasting profiles with Grady Emerson, because Sawyer Strassnyder is a tool shed. Like, he has a number of 60s, easy 60s on the card, and it's just going to be a matter of, what does the pure hitting ability look like for him? Does he take a step forward with his approach? I thought we saw some glimmers of that week one, and he feels like a no doubt top 15 sort of talent to me. But he was maybe the second best player I thought we saw this weekend. How about you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much there with you. And I said this on Hot Sheet. I think that there are a lot of guys in this draft class that bring the breadth of tools to the table that Sawyer Strassnyder does. He's a very clearly plus runner. Like, I think that it was one thing last year to see him do his thing, and he led the country in triples, and he plays a really good, like, rangy brand of outfield. But then it's another to, like, get in front of him and see the size of the human being and then the way he moves. And it's like, man, this guy is a crazy athlete. And so I was really impressed by the athleticism and the run tool. And those are things that I expected to be impressed by. I think that he's got more power than maybe people are aware of or recognizing at this stage in the game. I think that he actually has some pretty natural pop to his swing, and it's a clean swing too.
If people don't think he has power, he has monstrous raw power.
Yeah.
I mean, even in high school, he was one of the more impressive power hitters, and he's only gotten stronger since then.
And I think that, like, the level of that power is something that people need to be, like, aware of right now, because it's real.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, you know how people talk about all the time, it's like, oh, it sounds different coming off of his bat. It kind of sounds different coming off of his bat. Like, he's one of those guys for me, and I was impressed. I think that he is exactly where he belongs on our draft board, and he's one of the more impressive outfielders in this class. I'd feel very confident if I was a team drafting in, like, the top 10 and wanted an outfielder, that he would be the right pick.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at, I feel like I like him. We got in our preseason top 200 board, we got some feedback to push both Sawyer Strohsnyder and AJ Gracia down a little bit more into the middle of the first round. But if it's me picking and I'm looking at guys like Eric Becker, Tyler Bell, Tyler Spangler, these shortstops who I think have really well-rounded games but just less exciting tool sets, I could really see taking Sawyer Strohsnyder over those guys, like shooting for the moon with a pick. Sawyer Strohsnyder is a guy who, I mean, if the hit tool is as good as you think it can be, he's going to be a star. That's the kind of, like, explosive tool set and athleticism that he has. So he's one of the more... Yeah, go ahead.
Did you walk away feeling like he could play center field?
Yes, I think so. I would have liked to see maybe some more challenging balls in the gaps, but I mean, he can run, he can throw. I thought the routes, again, to the extent that I saw challenging routes from him, I thought those were good. I feel like he's a player who could be a solid or above average center fielder. And then if you move him to a corner, I think you could have a plus defender who could be really impactful. So it's kind of one of those, like, I don't know how long we're going to talk about, and he's not even that big. I mean, 6'2 is what he's listed at. I would have guessed bigger than that.
He'd be thicker.
But he is bigger. I just feel like we see so many of those center field body types these days, and I feel like if you can run enough, and I think he can run, there's no reason for me to think you can't if the other defensive instincts are there. So I'd say yes, unless he's playing in an outfield with, like, a Pete Crow Armstrong or a Sadane Rafaela type, I wouldn't move him at all. Are you in the same bucket? Cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. We got a number of other names to get to. Who do you want to go to next? Who is most impressive to you, most exciting, most interesting to you after Strohsnyder?
I got to talk about Cam Johnson. There are a couple other guys who I think are up there on the list, but it feels like it's been a really long time of Cam Johnson talk in the draft world, and that goes back to his high school days. That goes back to when he went to LSU and really struggled. Then he goes to Oklahoma, and last year was, like, fine at times, but most times he was not a terribly good strike thrower over the last couple years. And then up comes this new and improved Cam Johnson, where the dead zone fastball has kind of dissipated. It's, like, a really good looking fastball now. It's not just that velocity that I think he carried pretty well from his prep days into the start of his college career, but, like, just didn't play the same way that the velocity might suggest that it would for a lefty. It looked really good. And the thing that I've written about this now a couple times, but, like, the change in usage for him, where he went, it was like roughly 20% changeups and 10-ish% sliders, which is the direct inverse of what he was doing for the majority of last season, really fit him well. Like, that, it was a great looking changeup. I would go as far as to say it was a plus changeup. And I was talking to Skip Johnson after his start, where he struck out a career high 11 batters over 6 innings, in which he didn't allow an earned run, just 3 hits. And Skip Johnson told me the best starts that he made last year mirrored the usage that we saw in Arlington. Like, he has been changeup heavy in his best games, and even if the overall usage results didn't look like that from last year, that is how he's been at his best. And so to see him kind of get back into that groove and to show the potential that we have, like, long been talking about with Cam Johnson kind of gave me some hope that maybe we were going to see him shoot back up the draft board, and I was impressed. But I want to see more before I really lock in how I feel about that. But it's a great start to the year for somebody who's very intriguing.
Yeah, he just is a player who has always been, like, talent, and we've never seen the performance. I mean, in high school, there was a really good chance he could have gone in the first round. He was a very buzzy name leading up to the draft. That didn't happen. He got to LSU. He threw just 9 innings, really struggled to throw strikes. It was 16 walks, 13 strikeouts. So that maybe shows you the sort of at-bats players are facing if you have those strikeout walk totals in just 9 innings. Very wild, but also kind of unhittable if he was in the zone. Similar deal in 2025 with Oklahoma, just 21 innings. continued to walk more batters than he struck out. 25 walks, 24 strikeouts. And so coming into this game, I feel like there was huge error bars in terms of the performance we were going to see. We know that the talent is great. We know he can throw really hard. But I do think that the slider changeup dynamic is fascinating, because when he was in high school, it was all about the big fastball and it was all about this big, potentially plus sweepy breaking ball. Like, he was a huge breaking ball pitcher at the time. And I agree with you. You had a better look on Cam Johnson behind the plate. I was open side for basically the entirety of the weekend, dialing down on hitters. But even from the open side, like, the swings he was getting on this 84, 88 mile per hour changeup, which was maybe like 8 to 10 miles per hour off his fastball, like, he both located that pitch more consistently than the slider and just generated a ton of ugly swings. It was really effective down into his glove side versus righties. I think for him, both the changeup and the slider command need to still come a bit. And that's probably the case for him across the board. Like, fastball, slider, changeup, he needs to throw them all for strikes. I'm still a little bit optimistic about what the slider can become, because I think the shape of it is really intriguing. I'm not sure if you were excited with the potential that that pitch flashed, but he just had no feel to land that. And I do think, like, at this stage, maybe just dial in more to the pitches that you can throw a little bit more frequently around the zone. And that certainly seems to be the fastball and changeup. But it's 6'6", 255 pounds, really unique arm talent. I don't know if I was ever too concerned with, like, fastball shape with him, but he certainly missed a ton of barrels with the fastball this week. So yeah, it's encouraging. I think this is a talent that could easily be top three rounds with performance. So let's hope he can just kind of continue stacking effective starts, because it was maybe the best we've seen of Cameron Johnson since high school.
I would say that it was definitely the best we've seen. I mean, he's never struck out more batters than we saw against Texas Tech on that game. And then, to your point, I think that if there's one thing that's, like, really high up on my list of things that I need to keep watching before I establish a true opinion on Cam Johnson, it's probably how he's going to continue to deploy that slider. Yeah. He's got to have an offering that he's able to attack lefties with. And it's not just the fastball. Like, we need to see an off-speed pitch that's going to be effective. And he did throw his changeup to left-handed hitters, and it actually was, like, reasonably effective in those at-bats. But again, I that's just not something that's going to work long-term for him, especially against pro hitters that are left-handed. So the questions for me are off-speed control, and then is there something with spin that he's able to throw a little bit more frequently and effectively, especially to lefties, that is going to be a third offering? Because it felt to me, at least in this outing, like he was really good relative to what we've seen, but I didn't feel confident that there was a third pitch in there for sure. And so that's a question for me. And to your point, I think that that probably lands him somewhere outside of the top three rounds at the moment. But again, I also will say that I think Skip Johnson is one of the most brilliant, and you and I were talking about this in Arlington. I think Skip Johnson is one of the most brilliant pitching developing head coaches in the country. And so if there's one coach that I would have a lot of confidence in kind of bringing the best out of somebody, I think that Cam Johnson's in the right place to maximize his value. So it's an exciting combination of location and coaching and just pure stuff. And I do believe that Cam Johnson has the potential to fly up into the top three rounds if he can continue to perform. So that was an exciting performance to kick off what could be a cool year.
Yeah, seeing what Kyson Witherspoon did a year ago, making real strides with his depth of arsenal, control, strike throwing. If it happens again with Cameron Johnson, I think a lot more people are going to be aware of just the pitching development over there at that program. Okay, we've got a number of other players we can get into. Oklahoma had a ton of guys who stood out. They had another Camden Johnson, third baseman. Let's also talk about the names here, because We got Cam Johnson and Camden Johnson at Oklahoma. And then Vanderbilt has about a billion Johnstone or Johnstons on their team. We need a little more name diversity for these squads. But let's get into some of the hitters. I mean, I'll just mention briefly, because we're kind of running up here on time. Colin Barksy was tremendous. I mentioned this on Hot Sheet. But anyone who saw the three home runs that he hit opening weekend, they were jaw-dropping. He's a player in the past who has just struck out a lot, missed a lot, been a little bit too aggressive. So if he's able to tap into his power more consistently this spring, I think that's a really interesting prospect to be aware of. I really liked him a lot out of high school, and I actually liked him more for his kind of defensive work and work ethic behind the plate. I definitely am more excited about just the raw power and arm strength at this stage, and I have some concerns about just overall approach, contact skills, and receiving ability from Barksy. So he's definitely a name to kind of watch and be aware of. We've got other catchers here who stood out. I don't know who else impressed you, Jacob.
I mean, we can talk about Camden Johnson for a second. Just the the speed hitterish combo was really encouraging.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, I don't know if it's the same for you, but like sometimes I'll watch a player and I go, man, I can see that guy playing in the big leagues. And I think that Camden Johnson was one of them for me this weekend. He's not necessarily the most powerful player, just kind of a little like speedster type. But we did see him leave the yard. Like when he puts the ball in the air, there's some natural pop to the swing.
Yanked a slider. He got his hands out inside and yanked a slider down the line. That was pretty impressive and kind of surprising to me because I do think he's like definitely more hit over power. So seeing him sneak that ball out, I was like, okay, he can punish a mistake and take it down the pull side. That's good to see.
And it just speaks to how hitterish he is. Like it's just such a good, a clean approach. I think he makes great swing decisions. Really clean feel for getting the ball, the barrel to the ball. And then the speed was outrageous. I mean, I had several 3.9, low 3.9 times home to first. And some of his running through the bag.
Some of his run times on the turn were like outrageous for a turn time.
Like high 4.1s on the turn, low 3.9s when he was going through the bag. So we're talking about somebody who's like very easily when it comes prospect handbook time and his name is involved in that conversation, I could see 80 runs put on him. For sure. Maybe it's a 7 right now, but like in the future, I could absolutely see him being at the top of the scale from a run standpoint. The question I would have is third base. I don't know if that's the future for him. Yeah. I think that honestly, a move to the outfield and center field would make a lot of sense to me. I can imagine that with his speed, the range to the alleys would be phenomenal. I think that the arm was okay and probably better suited to move away from a position where that's really important and like into a position where you can kind of make up for it with the way that you move.
Right.
And so, yeah, I could see him being a successful center fielder. Other than that, it's probably a second baseman, but yeah, he was intriguing and the bat to me matters more than anything. And it was really good.
Yeah, I agree. I think the arm maybe is just a little bit light for third base based on the looks we got, but just the way he moves in the field, his body control, it would be unsurprising to me if he could play a number of other positions well enough to either profile as like a utility type in some capacity, or you just stick him out in center field, let him run around. But definitely an interesting player with some loud tools on the card. Let's talk about Logan Hughes here, Jacob. I mean, not all the players we're mentioning today are players who really like lit us up or excited us. And I think Logan Hughes is maybe the most prominent name who had kind of a disappointing weekend, at least for me. Outfielder, Texas Tech, we had him ranked number 53, seemed to be like a consensus top two round type entering the year, big and strong, excellent underlying batted ball data entering the year. His 2025 season was exceptional. And I just thought his approach at the plate was a little lacking to me. He looked uncomfortable in most of his at-bats. He went 1-for-11. One single, 3 strikeouts, a pair of walks. There's no doubt about the power and the impact. He hit a number of balls that were basically routine flyouts, but really loud, high flyouts. And you could just see the strength he can impart on the baseball when he does connect. But he whiffed a lot. It was 9 whiffs on 26 swings. That's a 35% miss rate, which is solidly in the, okay, that's concerning range. And I think more than anything, I expected to see better pitch recognition than I think he showed. It really felt like he struggled picking up spin, and there were a lot of uncomfortable check swings. And it just felt like throughout the weekend, he was kind of behind in ABs and never looked in control in the way that a Grady Emerson, for example, always looks in control at the plate. Again, I'm comparing very different levels of competition and pitching, but that's kind of the view I had on Logan Hughes. How about you?
You know, I won't back off how we feel off of a 3-game look just because it's such a small sample size, and 11 at bats is 11 at bats. But I think one of the things that I was concerned about even before we were going into the season with Logan Hughes was that there is an immense strength potential here. I mean, the EVs from last year are at the top of the scale in terms of what regular players were doing with the ball. Excuse me. I think that the swing decisions were underwhelming. I thought that he is going to be somebody who potentially struggles against pro pitching because of what they're going to be able to do to him with spin. And you touched on that. It's something that I'm going to want to have an eye on. Like that's just how I would put it for now. And he's not a center fielder, so it's not like he has a non-offensive tool to really kind of buoy the profile for when the bat isn't necessarily going the way that it should. He's very clearly a left fielder. He isn't an incredible mover. And you're basically banking on the bat speed and the strength to translate into somebody that's going to be a well above average player at the plate. And I wasn't convinced that that's who he is. And granted, there's so much time to change my mind, but it was not like a super flattering opening look.
Yeah, it wouldn't at all surprise me if we just kind of got the worst look of him of the season. It's very common to see hitters just kind of getting their timing at the beginning of the year. I remember opening weekend, Chase DeLauter going up against a really talented FSU left-handed pitcher staff, and he swung and missed a ton. And it was shocking to see that from DeLauter, because his profile and his overall track record prior to that says that he like never swings and misses. And with Logan Hughes, the swing and miss was kind of jarring to me, because this is a hitter who, in his college career, it's a year at Stetson and then one full season at Texas Tech, if we're just discounting what he's done so far in 2026, he's actually walked more than he struck out. He's never struck out at more than a 13.9% strikeout rate. Those are really impressive plate discipline numbers. And so I think I just expected to see a hitter who was far more in command of the zone and made a lot more contact. So to your point, I think it's a little aggressive to get too crazy over three games. And it's worth keeping in mind just what he's done in the past. And I don't want my one quick look to overwhelm that. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at now. I'll be very curious to see if this, it is just a matter of him getting the timing back, because that could easily be the case.
And last year, last year's a much bigger sample size, and he hit basically a 24% chase rate, which is not elite, but it's far from bad. Especially for the profile. I mean, he's kind of like you can fairly put him in the free swinger category, basically a 45% swing rate last year. He is aggressive on pitches in the zone. When he makes contact, it's loud, which I think he lived up to, even if it wasn't an impressive stat line. The contact was loud.
Yeah. He had a number of hard hit balls that were just a little bit too under and kind of routine catches. But I mean, he had, I think, at least four over 104 miles per hour. Yeah.
And I will say, one thing that, if you want to like iron out some of the concerns here from last year where the sample is much bigger, it probably is the batted ball profile. Like, his angles from last season were not outstanding. He only pulled, the air pull percentage was 26%, hard hit launch angle 14.2, which is like good but not great. The pull side launch angle was 2, which is not good. And I thought that maybe there were times where he was reaching a little bit to like get the ball into the air more aggressively, and it turned into under contact that was just not good. And like you said, it was just like way up in the air, and it was almost as if he was like trying to get the ball in the air more than he did last year. And it almost, maybe to me, the best way to describe it would be like he wasn't in the approach that we saw last year. It just didn't look the same to me. And so concern, no, but is he on the list of like guys that I want to go and continue to keep an eye on because I have questions out of opening weekend? That's probably where I would say it's at right now.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Any other names to mention? I also want to note on a quick reclassification piece of news that we had in the draft class. But before we do that, if there's anyone else you want to just tag or mention here, please
I'll throw in there Dayton LaChance, the catcher at Oklahoma. Really intriguing framer. I thought that he looked much better than he has in the past as a defender. Receiving was clean. The pop times were really good. They were like mid-1.8s consistently. He's got a super strong arm. Threw out a runner from his knees on a throw that I kind of had the crowd ooing and awing. Not a great hitter. It is definitely a below-average hit tool. I think that he's got well above average, if not plus, raw power that it's going to be hard for him to get to in games at his current hit rate. But catchers are catchers. And if you're going to be somebody who's going to frame a game real well and be a good receiver and blocker and have a strong arm like he has, you're going to go well in the draft. So that's a name that I would have an eye on.
Yep, that is a good one. Okay, really quickly before we get out of here, have to mention the Jared Greinlinger reclassification. Jared is a legitimate two-way player, pitcher, and hitter who ranked as the number 3 high school player in the 2027 class. As we're recording this, the day of, we got news that he is reclassifying to 2026. Ben Badler has a full piece kind of explaining the move, going into more of what he does on the field. But the rich get richer in the 2026 class. This is a tremendously deep high school pitching class. Greinlinger kind of jumps into really this first round group of arms in the Carson Bolamon, Gio Rojas, Coleman Borthwick, Jensen Hirschhorn, Logan Schmidt, sort of tier of pitchers. If he jumped right onto, we'll have to like solicit some feedback and see exactly where he's going to rank on our 2026 board. But if he jumps straight into first round range, I don't think that would at all be surprising. And thinking about like him as a legitimate two-way player versus Coleman Borthwick as a legitimate two-way player, which one of those players you'd rather have, whether you prefer him as a hitter or pitcher, I think it's going to be really fascinating to see kind of what the industry is thinking about that. But this is a player who's been on the national radar for a long time now. He plays at Huntington Beach High, which is one of the most prominent high school programs in the country. His brother was a notable draft prospect. Ahead of him, Trent Grindlegger. He's now a freshman at Tennessee. He was a member of the 2025 class and was a very notable player who teams have seen at the NHSI and just at that SoCal program for years. So I think it's always a bit odd when players are reclassifying at this late of a stage in the process, because I think in general you probably want to just have the full summer where teams can bear down on you. But as Ben notes, he's a super prominent player who everyone has kind of seen and is aware of. So just adding more talent to this class is exciting.
Yeah, not much to add there. I mean, it's an exciting player in a great class. So wouldn't surprise me to see him in the first round. Curious what the feedback we get from evaluators is going to look like to see exactly where he should rank. But if he survives the first 30 picks of the draft, it would be surprising to me.
Cool. Okay. So I'll just point to Ben's piece on that if you want more. And as we continue to move forward throughout the spring, we'll be updating our board regularly. So it'll only be a few more weeks until we kind of officially get a re-rank. We might have to actually just throw him in there before that. I'm not sure exactly how we'll handle it, but the 2026 class got better. Okay. Week two coming up. So hopefully you guys enjoyed week one. We'll be back next week to break down all the players we get to see. I'm very excited to see Jacob's first live look of Jackson Flora this year. That'll be a lot of fun to break down. I'm going to be kind of manning it from the office, looking at a bunch of stuff on TV and on the broadcast. So hopefully I'll be able to see a huge array of draft talent throughout the country. So thank you guys for hanging out. Thanks for supporting Baseball America. Thanks for reading all the work that Jacob and myself and everyone else on staff are writing. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We really do appreciate it. And for Jacob, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time.